We brainwashed out here, bro. Come on, man. This is a free man talking. Democrats had us voting Democrats for food stamps for years, bro. What are you talking about? Guns in the 80s, taking the fathers out the home, Plan B, lowering our votes, making us abort our children. God should not kill.
Kanye West, renowned musical artist, being overtly conservative and bold in his faith. I'm talking about, among other things, abortion. Good morning. Welcome into this Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of, it's a daily hour of observation, insight, and yes, a bit of absurdity. And I didn't think I was going to be here today. I really didn't. And those of you who follow on social media know that yesterday I posted that things in the personal life were spinning in a direction I did not expect and might cause me not to be here today. And I'll tell you all about that in just a moment. First up, thank you so much for coming along for the ride. It is, as I record this, it's Monday, the 28th of October, 2019, just a few days away from Halloween. And we are looking at a crazy weekend in the news, a crazy weekend with Kanye coming out pro-life, with a Democrat representative being exposed in a lot of different ways, I might add, and the leader of ISIS being killed. It is it's been a crazy, crazy weekend, and we'll try to look at everything, and who knows what we can throw in the mix besides in this hour. Back to personal business. Saturday afternoon, late, I got a telephone call from my mom. She's 85, lives by herself since her my stepdad, her hubby Jim, passed away, and that was in February. She's been on her own. She was watching football, as many of us do on a Saturday, sitting on the sofa in her little TV room there, watching football, and I guess at a commercial break, decided to get up and go to the kitchen to grab something to drink, and her foot fell asleep. She, you know how it is. You sit in one place for a little while. You got your legs crossed under you or whatever, and you cut off the circulation to your foot, and you really don't know it until you step on it and you realize, oh, that's not going to work. Well, that's what happened. She stood up, and one of her feet said, I'm still asleep over here. And she fell to the floor. And in falling to the floor, she put a crack in the bone just below her hip joint. And she couldn't get up on her feet and couldn't move. She called me, and I went to the house and helped her as much as I could. And it didn't take, it took maybe 3 minutes to realize, okay, the number you should have called first was 911. And then you should have told me where you were going because she could not move. She got on her feet, but couldn't put any weight on her left foot. And, so we had a pleasant encounter with the folks from the fire department and the ambulance that showed up. By the way, one of the paramedics that showed up with the fire engine had to have been 6'8", big, tall guy. Very nice guy, but I nicknamed him Lurch. Anyway, very nice people with the Birmingham Fire and Rescue Department, and they hauled us over to the hospital, or hauled Mom over to the hospital, and I followed along the way. Jane met me there, and we stayed with Mom and until they had a firm diagnosis and then got her into a room with a projection for what they were going to do next, which was surgery, to put screws in the bone to set it so that it would heal properly, and that would happen the following day. They said, oh, we'll do this tomorrow morning, and the more they talked, it was obvious that morning meant noon. And then when noon rolled around, it meant 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or maybe a little bit later, it was closer to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, after four, that she showed up back in the room after coming out from recovery. Everything went textbook perfectly. They had no problems. She's got the joint mended up, or not the joint, but she's got the break mended up. She's going to have some fun with painkillers for a little while. She actually should be back on her feet. They'll probably get her on her feet sometime today, I would think. Probably sometime this morning, physical therapy will be in. If my experience is is true, then she'll be up on her feet and they'll be moving her around. And then they'll start talking about next steps, going home, what she'll need, if she'll need anybody to be there with her, and so forth. So that's where we are as far as personal life is concerned. That was the excitement for the weekend. Mom fell, and it's all very stereotypically funny because she's a little old lady who fell and broke her hip. And I think she's painfully aware of how stereotypically humorous it actually is, because a few years ago, she had to call me. And I've told you the story about going on the cruise with my mom. She called me to go along with her on the cruise because hubby Jim couldn't go because he had a conflict. And none of her friends could make it because they were either busy or they had broken hips. So now she's a member of the Broken Hip Club. Bless her heart. But she's a trooper. She's doing really well. She's sharp, sharp lady. This, we're talking about a woman here who taught, computer science, at the college level for years, who wrote, a textbook, which by the way, is still being used to teach computer science at certain levels and gets updated once a year. And, she's just a very sharp, and she's a world traveler, literally a world traveler. I mean, she has been to China. She's been to France, to Rome, to London. She's been to, I mean, she's been all over, and she actually has souvenirs. She has a screen, a room divider screen in her living room that she bought in a little shop someplace in some little bitty town in China and had it shipped home, and stuff around the house from her travels, which is probably where I got my bug to want to be everywhere in the world. So far I've gone on cruises. Anyway, that's life in the weird lane for me for the weekend. Hopefully your weekend was uneventful. you got to unplug and just enjoy your life for a little while. And then you wake up to the news this morning that we have killed a nasty, nasty, horrible man who was the head of ISIS, and there is a Democrat representative who's involved in a scandal because photographs have been surfacing of her doing things naked. And you understand the difference, don't you, between the word naked and the word naked? Yes, the word naked, N-A-K-E-D, means without clothing. The word naked, N-E-K-K-I-D, means without clothing and up to something. And Representative Katie Hill was up to something with more than one other person. She's divorced. She's gone through a nasty divorce. She apparently had a female staff member she was involved with. She had a male staff member she was involved with. She had given the male staff member a $5,100 bonus out of her campaign funds, which is illegal. And the female staff member was young enough that there are concerns about improper influence and the like over this person. There have been pictures of her, oh my Lord, doing this young lady's hair, brushing this young lady's hair while she's sitting there in the buff. There are, there's a picture of her smoking a bong in the buff. There are other things going on. And oddly enough, Representative Republican Matt Gaetz has defended her, saying, well, this is just revenge porn. This is her husband lashing out. This is just because my experience with her is she's always been high energy, on time, prepared. Okay, Matt, good for you. I'm glad you appreciate her professionalism, but her personal life has crossed the lines of legality. And now she's been exposed, literally exposed, for her, I'm trying to find a kind way to put this, but her personal, dive into perversion. That's all I'll have to say about that. She's just decided to be kinky, and the world has found out about it, and that has caused her shame. Isn't it interesting that people are shamed after they do shameful things when they should have thought, wow, that's shameful. I shouldn't do that. I guess that's called wisdom. And she wasn't wise. Well, Matt, sir, Mr. Getz, I would just say there wouldn't be any revenge porn photos if there had been no misbehavior. I'm just saying. The pictures wouldn't have happened if the events where the photographs were taken had not happened. Had they been behaving themselves, none of this would be an issue. But true to form, for progressives, for people on the left, for the liberal brain, they thought they could. You rise to that level of prominence and power, and if you are not a right-thinking, honest person, if you do not have a moral foundation, then you believe you can do whatever you wish, and it's nobody else's business. And the problem with that is your decisions affect other people, even when you think they don't. So you have to be aware that when you decide to misbehave, there are going to be consequences. They may not happen right away. It may take a while, but there are going to be consequences. Eventually, those chickens will come home to roost. And shame will be your reward. Unless, that is, you're a hardcore progressive, and then it's nobody else's business, and it's their fault for shaming you. How weird is that? But that's where we are. God bless America. Also, in the news, probably much, much, much more impactful in the news than that, but probably not talked about as much because of the nature of the news beast. President Donald Trump authorized a special forces operation targeting Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic terrorist group ISIS, and the military says they successfully killed him during the mission. In fact, they'd actually retrieved body parts and identified him that way. Quote, amid reports Saturday of U.S. military helicopters over Syria's northwestern Idlib province, a senior Pentagon official familiar with the operation, an army official briefed on the matter, told Newsweek that Baghdadi was the target of the top secret operation in the last bastion of the country's Islamist-dominated opposition, a faction that has clashed with ISIS in recent years. That's according to Newsweek. A U.S. Army official briefed on the results of the operation says Baghdadi was killed in the raid, and we know the details now. We've seen the story. It's been around for long enough for us to know that the forces cornered him. He fled, taking children with him. I don't know if they were small children or not. He took children, three kids with him, ended up boxed in at the end of a dead-end tunnel, and when he was faced with capture, he took the coward's way out and set off an explosive vest and killed himself and his children. And of course, we know that President Trump stepped forward, announced what happened, and the progressive news media went ape bleep crazy, as they would. They, of course, would acknowledge, and the politicians would acknowledge, hey, it's a good thing this guy's gone, but let's not give this guy any credit. They bent over backwards to give Obama credit when Obama probably did more to enable those people than anybody else on the planet. But good riddance. We are now free of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, even though a new leader has stepped into the position. We'll find a way to deal with him as well. This guy was bad, bad, bad news. And it's good, good, good news that he's gone. More after the break, as the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Well, it's not a manic Monday, but it's still a Monday. As soon as I get through here recording and get everything processed and uploaded and done, I'm back in the car, taking off again, hitting the road, going to the hospital, where I'll be probably for the rest of the day. You know, hospitals are not fun places to be at all, whether you're in them to be treated for something or you're visiting. Because as my wife Jane and I discovered yesterday, they shut everything down except for the care for patients on the weekends. So we're there, and my mother's been taken out to her surgery, supposed to happen around lunchtime. So we figured, they have my cell phone number. They know, you know, we're not in the waiting room because we had been there. We'd been at the hospital until very late, 11-ish, on Saturday night. And once we got her into her room, she was very tired, wanted to sleep. We said our goodbyes. We'll see you in the morning. We took off, found a Waffle House, got some supper, got home close to 1 a.m., and crashed and burned really hard for a little while. I woke up about 4. One of those nights, happens from time to time. You wake up. You try, you know, you roll over, you do everything you know you're supposed to do to try to get back to sleep. Not working. Fine. Get up and just occupy yourself otherwise. And then three or so hours later, my wife gets up because the dog is driving her crazy. And then back at it again, you know. So that was the insanity of the weekend. But the thing is that we go back to the hospital yesterday and we're thinking, okay, so surgery's around noon. We had kind of a late breakfast because we got a late start. Of course, I wasn't really all that concerned because I know because of recent experience in the hospital, she's going to be sleeping as much as she can. She's going to painkillers and the like, you know. So I wasn't all that concerned about getting there really early. And sure enough, we got there 10-ish or so, and she's just snoring, gone, sound asleep. And we're thinking, we should be able to sneak out or go to the cafeteria or something, right? Grab a bite to eat if we get hungry. Well, we got hungry. And I said, you know what? One of us needs to stick around here just in case there's an issue with communication. Let me go scope out the cafeteria, see what we got to work with, and I'll let you know and bring some food back. How about that? And so I take off for the cafeteria, which is 2 floors down and on the other side of the hospital, and it's closed. And oh, no problem, though. They have vending machines. Oh, that's great. Let's go take a look at the vending machines. Every kind of potato chip, corn chip, chip, spicy, mild flavor, whatever. They've got it. Oh, they've got the universe of chips. They've got snack bars. They've got trail mix. They've got drink machines. Yeah. So that was lunch yesterday, was a bag of trail mix, some almonds, and a bottle of water. And I did discover it was more and more of snack machines and drink machines have card readers on them. And more of those also have the cardless technology built in. So you can use your phone or if you have a smartwatch, you can use that. So I stood there in front of getting bags of snacks. I stood there in front of the machine tapping the buttons on my watch and then holding it up to the machine, beep, and then pushing the buttons to get snacks out of the machines, and people staring at me. What is he doing? Yeah, I'm a nerd. This is how nerds buy things. So at any rate, that was our thing yesterday. And when we finished up, we're both exhausted. And our plans for Saturday night before this all happened had been to go get some Chinese, because we have there's a little bitty Chinese place that we go to, little tiny place that we have found that we just love. And they know us, and you know, we've been enough that they recognize us when we come in. And anyway, they kid around with us and the like. And that was our plan. We were going to go there because Jane had a long day of work Saturday, and I knew she was not going to be wanting to be involved in the kitchen in any way. And I was not prepared, you know, so I suggested, hey, let's go get some Chinese. And that was our plan. And so finally, late yesterday, we ended up fulfilling that plan. So that was how we wrapped the weekend up. Excuse me. And here we are on the Monday following the weekend. And now, back to the news. It seems that certain people on the left are a little bit unhappy with President Trump. Yeah, I know, generally speaking, they're all unhappy with President Trump. But specifically speaking, they're unhappy that he didn't let them in on the raid to snuff out Baghdadi. And by the way, can I just say one thing? If the Trump administration, if the Trump team does not put out Hoosier Baghdadi shirts and Hoosier Baghdadi hats for sale, they don't have an ounce of courage. They should. Hoosier Baghdadi. I'm just saying. You can send me royalties. I'll give you my address. Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Adam Schiff is whining because Democrat House leaders were not informed of the raid on Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. He appeared on ABC's This Week yesterday after President Donald Trump made the announcement about the raid. He says, my understanding, Pelosi wasn't told, but a couple of things first of all, good riddance. Al-Baghdadi was a bloodthirsty killer to the degree that he retained operational control of ISIS. Okay. This is an operational success. This is a symbolic victory. He had the blood of thousands and thousands of people on his hands, including many Americans and American journalists. So this is a great day. A ruthless killer has been brought to justice, he said to the host of the show, Martha Raddatz. It's not the end of ISIS by any means, he goes on to say, and we've had some recent setbacks with the release of over 100 ISIS fighters. Well, of course he had to bring that up. That struggle is going on, is going to have to go on, made more difficult by the fact that we've betrayed the Kurds and withdrawn our forces. So see, he's shifting attention now. He's shifting attention away from this, which is a remarkable victory, onto other things which he is misrepresenting. He's misrepresenting. Now, he and his cohorts, of course, you have to remember, have for as long as humankind can remember and these people have been around, they have objected to endless wars, never-ending wars. We don't need to send our boys into these places. We don't need to send our resources. And they argue and argue and argue to the cameras and to the microphones. But when it comes down to actually doing things, they're all about keeping us involved in these wars. All about. He goes on to say that in terms of notifying the Gang of Eight, that wasn't done. Look, the reason to notify the Gang of Eight is frankly more important when things go wrong. If the president said it was dangerous flying in, the Russians could have shot down American planes, he said. Here's the issue. One of the things here, he's talking about the Russians could have shot down planes. Others on the left are whinging on about how he told the Russians but didn't tell the Gang of Eight. Guess what? He did notify the Russians because of airspace issues. He had to let them know, our planes are coming in. We're doing something. Don't shoot. They had to be told. So here, Schiff is misrepresenting the situation again. Now, Raddatz asked, the Gang of Eight was told about the Bin Laden raid? His answer is, I wasn't part of the Gang of Eight at the time, but that's my understanding. Had this escalated? Had something gone wrong? Had we gotten into a firefight with the Russians? Which, as I've already explained, would not have happened because they were notified. The administration has to be able to say, we informed Congress, we were going in, they were aware of the risks. We at least gave them the chance to provide feedback. That wasn't done here. I think that's a mistake, but let's not lose sight of the fact that it was a success and a ruthless killer has been taken off the battlefield. Now, I love the way he wraps that around. He kind of bookends it by talking about this is a great day, this horrible guy's gone, and then cry, whine, complain, bitch, moan, Gary on, blame, boo, Russians, brr, but it was a success and we should be happy about that. What a weasel. What a weasel. Listen to this. Listen, just bear with me for a second. Charlie Kirk, who is a young conservative guy who's making the rounds, talking on college campuses and stuff, had said this to say on Twitter about this entire thing. Pelosi and Schiff were just in Jordan trying to undermine Trump's Syria ceasefire. And you know this is true. It's been in the news. They were just in Jordan trying to undermine this whole ceasefire situation. Dianne Feinstein repeatedly met with Iranian officials. John Kerry has tried to undermine Trump's Iran policy for 3 years. It just makes sense that Trump kept these Democrats in the dark. If he had not kept them in the dark, if he had included them in this, someone who we know has leaked to the press and other areas all kinds of important information would have gotten our people killed. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Holy moly. Happy Monday. Hopefully you're having a good one so far. And hopefully it's still Monday when you're listening. And if you're not, well, we had a great Monday. Thanks for joining us. Oh, man. Hang on here. I've got to get back to what I was looking at. I've got too many tabs open on my browser, as usual. On social media, I follow this Just Facts Daily thing. And from time to time, it's really interesting. It's just facts. It's stuff about life that most people really don't know. And it's handy to know these little bits of information. And it usually comes up with a question. And, well, it always comes up with a question. And then you have to go to, you click the link, go to the site, and it gives you three options for answers. And you pick the one you think is the true answer. And I enjoy doing that. The question today is, what portion of all private defined benefit programs, benefit pension plan assets, what portion, I promise I do read for a living, what portion of all private defined benefit pension plan assets are insured against default by the federal government? And your answers are less than 33%. 33 to 66%, and more than 66%. Well, the answer is more than 66%. More than 66% of all private defined benefit pension plan assets are insured against default by the federal government using your tax money. Your tax money is insuring defined benefit pension plans. The Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation insures 98% of all private defined benefit pension plan assets. These are mostly union pension plans. Some are significantly underfunded. Bailouts of these plans are currently financed by insurance premiums paid by all of the pension plans, but according to testimony by the directors of the PBGC, these premiums are only a small fraction of the amounts PBGC will need to support the guaranteed benefits of participants in plans expected to become insolvent during the next decade. Democrat Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio introduced this legislation to loan taxpayer money to these plans and then forgive the loans if the plans can't pay the money back. So, this is the perfect progressive plan. You design legislation which creates a loan the conditions of which don't really have to be met because we're going to forgive the loan anyway. They can't just give them the money as a grant because people will go nuts if they find out. But if it's a loan, oh well, they'll pay it back, won't they? No, they won't. And they know it'll never be paid back. Something that is key to remember when you're thinking about how government operates, specifically leftist government, and that is that money is the key to power. Spending is everything to these people. They will throw money at everything. Always follow the money. Find out where it's coming from. Find out where it's going. Because when it comes to progressive success, you have to lubricate the rails with a lot of cash. And that is how that works. Well, let's go back to what happened over the weekend and with Al Baghdadi being eliminated. The Washington Post early yesterday morning published an article about the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, cornered in a tunnel. The terrorist leader detonated a suicide vest, killing himself and three of his children. The original title of the Washington Post piece read, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Islamic State's terrorist-in-chief, dies at 48. That's an interesting way to put it. Then, in a bizarre twist, the title was changed. So it then read, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State, dies at 48. Austere religious scholar at the helm of the Islamic State. Really? This bloodthirsty rapist and murderer is now an austere religious scholar. Wow. As you can imagine, there was a bit of backlash. And so the title was changed for a third and final time to read Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, extremist leader of Islamic State, dies at 48. Well, yesterday afternoon, Washington Post Vice President of Communications said the following about the title controversy, quote, regarding our al-Baghdadi obituary, the headline should never have read that way, and we changed it quickly. End quote. Okay, the title is ridiculous, and the shuffle is ridiculous. And it, as these things tend to do, generated a little bit of a wave in social media. It led to a hashtag on Twitter. Hashtag WAPO death notices is what it was. As of yesterday, it was trending at number 5 on Twitter. And here are a few of the fake death notices mocking the Washington Post. Jeffrey Dahmer, LGBT activist pioneer, unconventional romantic, and avant-garde gastronomist, passed away at age 34, surrounded by his caretakers. Wicked Witch of the West, devoted sister, broom enthusiast, died suddenly from oversaturation, age unknown. Adolf Hitler, passionate community planner and dynamic public speaker, dies at 56. Ted Bundy, unconventional pickup artist, dies shockingly at 42. Emperor Palpatine, austere holder of emergency powers and advocate for democracy, died after a fall. Nero, emperor who helped Christians bring light to Rome, dies at 30. Oh, gosh. If you're not familiar with that, Nero lit the streets of Rome by burning Christians. Sauron, passionate collector of rare jewelry, dead, age unknown. John Wayne Gacy, eccentric children's performer, dies at 52. John Wilkes Booth, noted thespian, dies at age 24. Mao Zedong, who saved 20 to 45 million of his own people from having to suffer through the struggle of existence, dies at 82. Saddam Hussein, successful politician, oil baron, and noted tough boss, dead at 69. Charles Manson, famous songwriter and meditation leader, dead at 83. Al Capone, noted self-made entrepreneur, dies at 48. And finally, Heinrich Himmler, passionate chicken farmer, dies unexpectedly at 44. This is one of those times that social media is just priceless. Oh, man. Now, the contrast between the way the Washington Post headlined the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi under President Trump and the way they headlined the death of bin Laden under Obama makes these WAPO death notices all the more important to note. On May 2nd of 2011, after it was announced that Osama bin Laden had been killed, the Washington Post offered a much more simple headline. Quote, Osama bin Laden killed, leader of terrorist group Al-Qaeda, was 54. Speaking on Sunday about the operation to take out Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, President Trump stated in part, the thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. Terrorists who oppress and murder innocent people should never sleep soundly, knowing that we will completely destroy them. These savage monsters will not escape their fate, and they will not escape the final judgment of God. He went on to say, last night was a great night for the United States and for the world. A brutal killer, one who has caused so much hardship and death, has violently been eliminated. He will never again harm another innocent man, woman, or child. He died like a dog. He died like a coward. The world is now a much safer place. Thank you, Mr. President. Well said. Very well said. On the same subject, over at Saturday Night Live, the once funny late night comedy show, Saturday Night ran a skit with cast member Pete Davidson playing a terrorist. He thanks President Trump, who was played, of course, by Alec Baldwin, for bringing jobs back to ISIS. Oops. That was bad timing. Because literally just hours later, the news would break that al-Baghdadi was gone. Taken out by the president these people ridicule. The president these people hate. It's a good day for the world. A bad day to be liberal. Thank you, Mr. President. Good work. More after the break when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective, the Monday edition of the podcast. Hopefully you're having a big day today. Okie dokie. I want to wrap things up today with a story about what's happening on college campuses. It's kind of a sharp turn from the other stories, but this is something I think is important. And I wish we could see happening on college campuses everywhere. The president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University gave a lecture to students they'll never forget. And I'd like to thank, by the way, before I go any further, credit where credit is due, I'd like to thank my old radio colleague, Ben Cleary. He posted this on social media. And I thought, this is perfect. This is so good. So the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University gave a lecture to students they'll never forget. Recently, a student complained about a sermon that made him feel guilty and blamed the school for making students feel uncomfortable. This is not uncommon. Many universities are now so afraid of offending even one student that political correctness has run amok. However, this university is based on religion. And so one would expect that discipline, good character, and personal accountability would be a big part of the curriculum. Everett Piper, who is the president of the school, wrote a letter to the students admonishing them that playing the victim, blaming others, and not admitting mistakes is not a way to live a productive and meaningful life. And here is that letter. This is not a daycare. It's a university. This past week, I actually had a student come forward after a university chapel service and complain because he felt victimized by a sermon on the topic of 1 Corinthians 13. It appears this young scholar felt offended because a homily on love made him feel bad for not showing love. In his mind, the speaker was wrong for making him and his peers feel uncomfortable. I'm not making this up. Our culture has actually taught our kids to be this self-absorbed and narcissistic. Anytime their feelings are hurt, they are the victims. Anyone who dares challenge them and thus makes them feel bad about themselves is a hater, a bigot, an oppressor, and a victimizer. I have a message for this young man and all others who care to listen. That feeling of discomfort you have after listening to a sermon is called a conscience. An altar call is supposed to make you feel bad. It is supposed to make you feel guilty. The goal of many a good sermon is to get you to confess your sins, not coddle you in your selfishness. The primary objective of the church and the Christian faith is your confession, not your self-actualization. So, here's my advice. If you want the chaplain to tell you you're a victim rather than tell you that you need virtue, this may not be the university you're looking for. If you want to complain about a sermon that makes you feel less than loving for not showing love, this might be the wrong place. If you're more interested in playing the hater card than you are in confessing your own hate, if you want to arrogantly lecture rather than humbly learn, if you don't want to feel guilt in your soul when you are guilty of sin, if you want to be enabled rather than confronted, there are many universities across the land, in Missouri and elsewhere, that will give you exactly what you want. But Oklahoma Wesleyan isn't one of them. At OKWU, we teach you to be selfless rather than self-centered. We are more interested in you practicing personal forgiveness than political revenge. We want you to model interpersonal reconciliation rather than foment personal conflict. We believe the content of your character is more important than the color of your skin. We don't believe that you've been victimized every time you feel guilty, and we don't issue trigger warnings before altar calls. Oklahoma Wesleyan is not a safe place, but rather a place to learn. To learn that life isn't about you, but about others. That the bad feeling you have while listening to a sermon is called guilt. That the way to address it is to repent of everything that's wrong with you rather than blame others for everything that's wrong with them. This is a place where you will quickly learn that you need to grow up. This is not a daycare. This is a university. Oh my. Oh my. Thank you, sir. That's from Everett Piper. All you have to do is look around at the expensive phones, video games, clothes, computers, anything else high-tech, to see how spoiled kids are. Just because parents have the money to purchase anything their child's heart desires does not mean they should give it to them. A child may want to play with a sharp knife from the kitchen, but despite their crying, you aren't going to let them have it. You know they'll hurt themselves. All these expensive things they want seem harmless now, but wait until they get older. They want bigger and more expensive things. Things the parents can't afford or will go into massive debt to buy. The child who is now grown into a young adult is befuddled that the world is not a receptacle for anything they want. What some parents don't understand is It's not that the gift is wrong or bad, although sometimes it is. It's the lesson of teaching them something valuable. That life is not always fair. You don't always get what you want. And most of the time, you need to work for what you want. Work in itself teaches us teamwork, verbal and written communication skills, being responsible, following rules, and knowing how to behave in different environments. It also motivates us to purchase meaningful things like a car, insurance, a home, or raise a family. Parents need to remember they'll not always be there to catch their children when they stumble and fall. It is great to be encouraging, but they also need to learn to pick themselves up and keep going. However, will a child find their dreams if there's always someone there to prevent them from learning the lessons? Parents need to assume responsibility for the situation that's happening on college campuses today. Rather than being tolerant of your child's hissy fits and raising them under pop culture psychology standards, parents need to return to some real basic honest values. Need to establish standards, guardrails. Those guardrails are there to keep you from getting killed by flying into a ditch off the highway. They're not there to oppress you and to limit you. They're there to keep you safe. The same holds true for standards in life. And today, there's an entire generation. Actually, I think there's two now. Of people who have been raised believing that if someone disagrees with them, the other person is wrong. Our society has changed. We used to be a society that would accept a teacher's guidance when a child was being disruptive or when a child was failing in school. And we've become a society which blames the teacher rather than examining what's happening with the child. Yes, I know. Education is not what it used to be. I also know that there are great teachers out there who work hard and spend their own money because the education system is so messed up that the vast majority of the funding that's going into education is going to fund pensions, not to help our students. That's something you should look into. When they ask for more money to help the students, invariably a good chunk of it ends up going into pension plans for teachers and administrators. And I know that they're brave, decent, honest people trying to teach our children, and it's an uphill fight. But at the same time, there's a lot going on that does not need to go on. And parents need to stand up and stop accepting all of this absurdity and foolishness that's going on in our society. Because the result of all of this absurdity and foolishness is the college environment where children angrily stand against what is right. That's it for today. God bless. Have a great day. Hopefully we'll be back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.